Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the program this evening, in a very important address that couldn't have come a day later, the Chief Justice of India today told women advocates that there should be 50% representation of women advocates in the judiciary, or the judiciary itself should have 50% representation of women, which would correct a historic anomaly based on thousands of years of suppression. Chief Justice Ramana, whose stinging observations led to the induction of women in the National Defence Academy earlier, is clear. There needs to be a gender correction in the judiciary. His statements champion diversity and equality, which lie at the heart of what we are meant to be celebrating in our India. Also on the show tonight, a crucial expansion of the UP cabinet with an eye on the elections. This is meant to reflect caste and community priorities ahead of the polls. The opposition Samajwadi Party says this is a superficial effort at increasing representation, essentially an eyewash. We will be debating that later on the program. But first, let's take a look at these landmark observations made by the Chief Justice of India.
I want to remind all of you what Karl Marx said. Of course, this is a different context about workers. Workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. I will modify this. Women of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. In the entire country, our lower judiciary, I don't want to use the word of lower judiciary, but subordinate judges and all that, less than 30%. In high courts, women judges are 11.5. Supreme Court, after 4 judges out of 33, we are just around 11 or 12. Lawyers, 1.7 million advocates in the country, only 15% are women. This needs a urgent correction.
Meanwhile, Justice B.V. Nagaratna will be India's first woman Chief Justice in 2027. Here's the first time where she's actually spoken publicly since her elevation.
Female judicial appointments, particularly at senior levels, can shift gender stereotypes, thereby changing attitudes and perceptions as to appropriate roles of men and women. Now, coming to women advocates, my advice is that you should involve in yourselves in all branches of law and continuously strive to do better. I think the time has come to break the glass ceiling and for women to strive ahead.
Well, joining us now, one of India's most senior advocates in the Supreme Court, Indira Jaisingh, who's been a champion of women's rights in so many areas. What a wonderful day it is, ma'am, to see the possibility and to see a Chief Justice discussing 50% representation of women in the judiciary. What would that actually mean for us seeking justice in India?
So, as you know, reservations in public service, for example, are a well-known mechanism in the country today, right from the commencement of the Constitution. And I have always been surprised by the fact that although our Constitution mentions reservations for scheduled castes and scheduled tribes, it did not mention reservation for women. In public spheres, which would include, obviously, the judiciary. But let us not forget that it does include institutions like Parliament as well. We have recently completed 25 years from the time the bill for reserving 33% in our parliaments was introduced, and we still haven't seen it as yet. To come back to your question, we have this very, very important statement from the Chief Justice of India, who says he would like to see 50% representation of women in the judiciary. And I take it would mean from the Supreme Court to the High Courts to the courts below. But there has to be a matching political will. The Chief Justice can't make these appointments on his own. He has signaled that this is what this is the direction in which the country needs to move. But it is up to the political establishment in this country to pick up that signal and to say, okay, let's pick the ball and run with it. So yes, I agree with you. It's historic. Times are changing. That's obvious. When we women have demanded your 50% reservation, for call it what you like. Look, the name is not important. Whether you call it reservation, whether you call it special provisions, whether you call it affirmative action, it doesn't matter. The point is the equity in the matter of reservations in institutions of power. That is overdue when it comes to women.
So just, ma'am, in the last little while, what we've been told is a clarification from his office that the word that he wanted to actually use was not reservation, but representation. And as I understand it personally, you can't have reservations in Supreme Court or in judicial appointments. Is that right? So it's representation.
It's absolutely representation, but correct. Not just representation. It is representation which is fair, which is equitable, which is equal, and which reflects that diversity of the nation.
Right.
And this is why in the statement which I made, I said it's not just about women. What about the LGBT community?
Correct.
What about disabled?
Of
course, religious minorities. But the point is it is the legitimacy of the judiciary that we are looking for. And public institutions will only have legitimacy
if there's diversity, right? That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
You're talking about diversity in the truest sense of the word.
Yes.
But ma'am, I must ask you this. This Chief Justice has also made some stinging observations which resulted in women being admitted into the National Defense Academy from next year onwards. When there was this sexist, old-fashioned, passé argument which was brought to the Supreme Court, to his bench, by the government saying, oh, you know, women are physically, they are different, there'll be problems, there's infrastructure, physical separation of men and women is a problem. This Chief Justice, and please delay the entrance exams, this Chief Justice said, nothing doing, there is no gender discrimination, get on with the job. He, in his observations today, is following through with what he obviously believes in very, very deeply. This is a wonderful mindset we need at the highest levels.
See, what you need to understand is the right to equality and the right to non-discrimination is immediately realizable in international law. It is not something that is to be progressively achieved. And this is the reason why there is an urgency to this request that there should be equal representation of women in all structures of power. Let me just for a moment address the question of infrastructure. Let me tell you that when I was appointed the first woman additional Solicitor General of India, we had our office on the second floor of the Supreme Court. And do you know that on the second floor of the Supreme Court, there is no ladies' toilet? Now, that's an example of infrastructure for you. But I need to also tell you that at one point I was appointed an expert member to the United Nations on the Committee for Anti-Discrimination Against Women. And I found that the UN building did not have actually toilets for women when it was first built. And as you enter a woman's toilet in the United Nations now, you can see the marks of the gents' toilets being converted to women's toilets. So let me tell you, it's a whole international issue. It's not specific to any particular institution, whether it's the army or whether it's the Supreme Court. Architecture is not gendered. Architecture all around us is not gendered. And the very fact that the Chief Justice brought up the issue of infrastructure, he mentioned toilets, something as basic and as fundamental as that.
We keep in our country getting stuck on the business of toilets. Let me give you an example. We make 7,500-ton guided missile destroyers for the Indian Navy. Women have been denied the role to serve on these warships in command roles. Why? Because there is a problem of infrastructure. What is the problem? We don't have the ability to have bathrooms for women. You can make a guided missile destroyer. You cannot make a bathroom. It's absurd. It's this mindset.
Look, what about our priorities? Okay, if it is our priority to feminize the public spaces in which we work, then let's give that priority.
Okay, ma'am, I must ask you now. You know, you'd sent across something to me which I've gone through very closely about some of your views on what the Chief Justice said, and you mentioned, and there was an interesting statement, there is a systemic culture of exclusion that is built into the hyper-masculine legal profession and courtroom culture. In your decades of practicing law, could you give us a few more examples of that?
Let me tell you, you ask women lawyers in confidence, do a survey, I'm recommending it to you, do a survey of junior women lawyers entering the bar who have no option but to enter the chambers of male lawyers. Ask them what are the levels of, for example, sexual harassment that they face, okay? Why is it that the Bar Council of India has till today not amended its discipline rules to include sexual harassment by male lawyers or female lawyers as a misconduct? Yes, the Supreme Court has its own gender sensitization committee. What about a private lawyer? What about a, and 99.9% of the legal profession functions in the private sector, save and except those who represent governments, who have offices in which they work, in which there is a certain culture, certain level of protection, certain fundamental rights guaranteed to them. What happens in the private sector? And this is one example. You asked me to give you examples of the hyper-national. The other example, of course, is, you know, today in any national law school, the percentage of women who enter is much higher than that of men. Right. And yet, what about the fallout rate? By the time you enter the courtroom, where are those missing women who entered law school? Well, some will argue that they enter law firms. But I know women who have dropped out of law firms because they face discrimination within those law firms. So there is no lack of the hyper-masculine culture that you see all around you. Don't forget, it was not very long ago when it was said the legal profession is not for women. This has been articulated in judgments of the courts all over the world. So it's a very, very new phenomenon. People feel a bit threatened when they see competent women in the corridors of the Supreme Court. But I must tell you that I was watching today's proceedings. Unfortunately, I could not remain present. I'm in Mumbai. Each and every one of those women who spoke, introducing the judges, spoke with a level of self-confidence beyond belief. Yep. This would not have happened even 10 years ago. Yep. It was very, very clear that the balance of power between the legal profession and the judiciary is almost equal now. You know, they were able to speak their mind without hesitation. And I think it's thanks to people who went before us and set examples. There were women judges who said very openly, we are the first generation of women in our families, okay? That's another hyper-masculine. And there was a male judge who's been appointed who's four generations into the legal profession. Right. You see the difference right there?
Yes.
Okay? Yes. How many women have four Oh, yes, you will have four generations of sons.
You've not had four generations of daughters, yeah.
Four generations of daughters, no.
I take that point, Pam. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Thanks very much indeed. We're also joined now by another wonderful guest, Justice Deepak Gupta. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us. Justice Gupta is a former judge of the Supreme Court. Sir, what the Chief Justice of India today mentioned in statistics was shocking. In the lower judiciary, less than 30% of judges are women. In high courts, 11.5%. In Supreme Court, only 11 to 12%. 1.7 million advocates in India, only 15% are women. Why is this the case?
It's a societal issue. I think I totally agree with the Chief Justice of India that we need to have more representation for women in the Supreme Court. It's 50%. Why not even more than 50%? If they're competent enough, they can come in. The problem is that you just look at the ratio of lawyers. If there are less lawyers, there'll be less judges because you select from lawyers. But, you know, there is a very heartening feature to it. You mentioned yourself that there are 30% women judges in the district judiciary. And if you go to the level of munsifs and sub-judges and all, you'll find that the figure is almost 40 or 45%. This change has come in the last 10-15 years when more and more women have joined the legal profession. And in fact, more women tend to join the judiciary than to join the profession,
yeah,
because they feel that they're safer in the as judges than as lawyers.
Do you believe
and there are
that
states,
some of...
And there are, I'll just add, there are a number of states which already provide for 33% reservation for women in the entry level. So that is coming up. But the problem is the number. For me, that is not such a big problem, because another 3-4 years, 5 years, this 30% will become 35 and 40 and 50. And maybe, as Indra Jai Singh said, today the number of women judges joining at the lowest level is normally in most states more than the male judges.
Right.
So,
I'm just trying to understand, sir. There would have been so many, utterances, pronouncements by other chief justices on greater women's representation being required. This could not be the first time it's happening. But why is it that nothing has been done? Why is it that this chief justice now has to say that as chief justice of India, he has to try and deal with things such as an uncomfortable environment, a lack of infrastructure, a lack of female washrooms, a lack of creches, and a lack of sitting places? Why in 2021 does the Chief Justice of India need to be dealing with this?
But that, the problem of women is much more. One can't sort of undermine the problem that they face. But the lack of infrastructure is all over. It's in courtrooms. You have courtrooms. I was Chief Justice in Chhattisgarh and Tripura. You have courtrooms running from one room.
You know,
what to talk about a washroom? They don't even have a washroom, whether it's a male judge or a female judge. In one small station in Chhattisgarh, I was told by the lady judge that she had to go and request the SGM or somebody and go to use their washroom. Now, we have to, come up with better infrastructure and ensure that the basic facilities are available to women. Not only to women judges.
Yeah.
What about women litigants? We never talk about women litigants. We never talk about women. If you don't have toilets for judges, what can you have toilets for women litigants who come and spend the whole day there in the
courts? Yeah.
Courts. So that situation needs to be, and I'm glad that Justice Ramana took this, I'm so happy in the last 5-6 months he's taking the bull by the horns and dealing with issues which really need to be dealt with. And this is definitely, we need much higher representation of women. And it is during his tenure that the collegium recommended 3 lady judges to the Supreme Court. And we fortunately have 4. But that is not the answer. The 4 must go up to 10 and 15 and 17, if not more, as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, sir, thank you so much for speaking to us. It's been wonderful speaking to you, getting your views on this. It is so important and so heartening when we have these remarks made at the highest level of the Supreme Court. Thank you very much indeed, sir. The Uttar Pradesh Chief Minister Yogi Adityanath today expanded his cabinet with former Congress leader Jitin Prasada, the most high-profile new face in the ruling BJP state government. The expansion comes months before the assembly polls in the politically key state, and the newly inducted members have been chosen with that poll arithmetic in mind. What really was the calculation behind all of this? We're joined by the senior BJP leader, Alok Vats. We're also joined by Supriya Shinate of the Congress. Mr. Vats, let me come to you first. The Samajwadi Party actually says that all of this is essentially eyewash. The model code of conduct comes into place in a short period of time. So this is just getting your election focus, community and caste representation sorted. This has nothing to do with governance at all. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. Even last minute changes are made
in any team, and the captain has the right to reshuffle his team at any time, whether even if he's in the last inning, last over. There's nothing unusual about it. It's done all in the right earnest.
I'm not saying there's anything unusual about it, but if you look at it, you've got at least 3 new OBC faces as well. You've got a new Brahmin face. The BJP appears to be checking all the boxes it needs to make it more viable as the elections come up. I mean, what's wrong in admitting that, we are perfectly in our rights to do that? That's what's being done over here. This is not for governance.
Mr. Soham, obviously with the fear of election lurking in the corner, some adjustments have to be made, also keeping in mind the election prospect.
Sure.
So there's nothing wrong in it.
Right.
Every party does it.
Fair enough.
We have also done it.
Fair enough. Some would say that's a bit cynical, considering that people in the state want the job to be done. They maybe aren't thinking about elections quite yet. But there's nothing wrong or illegal in what you've done. Supriya, the Congress party has lost Jitin Prasad some time back. He's now being inducted. Is this something that continues to rankle the party?
I will wish everybody well, whoever has become a minister today, including Jitin Prasad. He's a good friend of mine. But I will only ask, Jitin used to run a Brahmar Chetna Manch before he joined the BJP and asserted that Brahmins in UP are being exploited. Does he carry the same sentiment as he joins the BJP, or suddenly the Brahmin exploitation has ended? That's point number one. The person, Sanjay Nishad, who's being made an MLC, just a few days back has been found on a sting saying that Yogi and Akhilesh are his enemies. He can get his enemies annihilated. He will burn police stations. How are we letting these people get into our legislatures? And last but not the least, Vishnu, UP needs good governance. You can keep getting people to get your caste arithmetic right. But the reality is, as far as high prices are concerned, unemployment, what we saw during the corona crisis with dead bodies in the Ganges, this is all on account of misgovernance. How are these people going to fix misgovernance? And a very small point I want to make. The UP budget is done and over with. The supplementaries are done and over with. What are these new guys going to do? And I agree with the people from the opposition who say that the model code of conduct will kick in. So then you should just put up your hand and say, we did this blatantly and brazenly to get a caste arithmetic right. But guess what? That is not going to assure you win this time, because everybody in UP has been affected by the misgovernance of the BJP.
In fact, I wanted to ask Mr. Vats a little bit more about Sanjay Nishad. There was a sense that he would be included, but I believe he's not been included. His is not in the name.
But he's an MLC.
Right.
He's been made an MLC.
He's not there as part of the cabinet expansion this time around. Why has that taken place? Why has that not, his name not been included?
Well, that is the prerogative of the chief minister. If he doesn't want him to be included, he's not included. That's simple. But yes, people from that community have found their representation there. And let me tell you one thing. As Supriya was saying that very soon the model code of conduct will come and there will be no room left for these people to do anything. What happens in Punjab? Here there are just six people. There the whole cabinet has been changed. The whole thing has been reshuffled. And there also the election is around the corner. What will happen there to the whole
thing? I will answer that question.
They will have nothing to do.
But Supriya, that's exactly the same thing. Go ahead, Supriya, answer.
That.
Yes.
Yes. I will answer that question.
People, again, six people here, the whole cabinet has been reshuffled.
Okay. I will answer that question, sir. I was anticipating it. If you let me allow... Mr. Alok, if you keep quiet...
Just one second, Supriya. Let him finish his sentence. I'll come to you after that.
Supriya, I've not completed my sentence. Please hold your...
Go ahead, sir. Yes.
And as regards UP, she was saying about unemployment and other things. Look, the way UP government has done fought against corona is the best.
Sir, the UP government's fight against corona needs an entire program, maybe 10. That's not the focus over here. But I think the point that you made about Punjab, Supriya, will you take that on? You criticize the BJP in UP.
Absolutely.
You've done the same thing with elections in Punjab.
No, I will tell you where the difference is. In Punjab, relax, sir. It's my turn to speak. In Punjab, there is a new chief minister. He, of course, and I say, even Yogi Adityanath's prerogative is right. He can elect as many ministers as he wants to. There were 53 in his cabinet. The constitution allows a space for 7 more, which is 60. He's gone and filled that limit. It's his prerogative. I'm not denying that. In Punjab, the difference is there's a new chief minister in place. He wants a new team. Some have been retained. Some have been let go off. The reality is that in Punjab, what is happening is...
But it's
not,
also being done ostensibly with elections in mind, Supriya.
No, Vishnu. What we are not doing in Punjab is calling up the media and saying, play up this caste and play up that caste. Why are so many people from the BJP and UP giving calls to journalists and saying, this is the caste we have got into the cabinet. This is the caste from here. This is the region. What is this all about? Is politics going to be reduced only by caste arithmetic, or is governance going to find some favor? The no, reality
but what
is
governance
that
is the Congress going to achieve in Punjab because the elections come up in what, less than 100
yes.
days?
I'm glad you asked me that question. In Punjab, our MLAs wanted a leadership change. And with that leadership change, we got the first Dalit MLA to become a chief minister of Punjab. Now he has the prerogative to set his cabinet. I don't think we can deny him that right.
Even okay.
Yogi
right.
Adityanath
second,
has that prerogative. Even Yogi Adityanath has that prerogative. I just don't understand the need to advertise cars, the need to advertise regions. That's not what we are doing in Punjab. Why are you doing that in Uttar Pradesh?
All right. And Mr. Bhatt, why are you advertising caste? Go ahead.
Well, all
in
the
30
people
seconds,
are,
sir, yes.
All the people, all the opposition parties are making a hue and cry regarding Jatiya Janganna. The caste-based counting. So if we have made some representation, we are quite clear about it and we are announcing it that we are given representation to the OBC. So what is harm in it?
I will tell you what is the harm in it, sir.
As regards Punjab, Supriya was saying, look, we have also made change of guard in many states, but without a murmuring. Look what the way it happened in Punjab. It was not.
Let's not
well
get
done.
Too carried away. There were 200 MLAs
well
who were sitting on
the
protest
way,
against
the
chief minister
the,
of Uttar
the,
Pradesh.
The
that is the reality of Uttar Pradesh that
place.
You want to mask.
It is not,
you cannot.
All right.
Okay, look, I need to wrap this entire program up. It's quite clear that what has been done, and Mr. Vat says that of course it's being done with elections in mind. What necessarily is wrong? The Congress said that as far as Punjab is concerned, they needed a change of leaderships. But many would suggest that all of that in Punjab is also being done with elections in mind. Two sides of the same coin, who knows? We're going to take a short break, more coming up.